today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
That's my first conception, man. That's the way I thought it should go. And I still do. I mean, of course, it could stand much improvement. Most likely in another 25, maybe 50 years, some youngster will come along and take the style and really do something with it, you know?
Everybody, welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster, and on behalf of Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to the second episode in our little brief history of bebop, the jazz movement that started in the early 40s and changed jazz forever, ushered out the era of swing bands and ushered in modern jazz. If you remember yesterday, we picked up from some key recordings that were made mostly in the years 1944, and some small recording continued throughout 1945, and by 1946, the movement of bebop was established as a broad-based sound and scene among New York jazz musicians, and many more had joined the pioneering band of players that we heard about yesterday. And just to give you a few names to indicate how much the scene had broadened and what kind of people were involved with it. These were people that were young, for the most part, were on the cutting edge, and all of them had musical vision to see where this music was going to go. And they included trumpeters like Fats Navarro and Kenny Dorham, trombonist J.J. Johnson and Kai Winding, alto saxophonist Sonny Stitt, tenor saxophonist James Moody, baritone players Leo Parker and Serge Chaloff, the great vibraphonist Milt Jackson, who would go on to many great achievements in his jazz career, and the pianist Earl Garner and Al Haig, as well as bassist Slam Stewart, one of the greatest names in bop, for sure. And around this time, the sound was also getting a foothold on the West Coast, mainly around the forward-thinking jazz scene in L.A. And some of the players out there were trumpeters Howard McGhee and Art Farmer, altos Sonny Criss and Frank Morgan, tenor players Teddy Edwards and Lucky Thompson, trombonist Melba Liston, pianist Dodo Marmarosa, Jimmy Bunn, and Hampton Hawes. The great guitarist Barney Kessel was part of this, too, and he turns out to be an amazingly influential and great guitar player. I learned about Barney Kessel, just as a quick side note, actually through Pete Townsend. Pete Townsend was a devotee and big fan of Barney Kessel, and I think it was on his Scoop album. He had a couple of things that he described as, or maybe even in the title, was a piece for Barney Kessel. And that's how I came back to him. But tracing him all the way back to the beginning of bebop in L.A. is pretty amazing. The bassist Charles Mingus, of course, who was a giant of jazz, started out in the West Coast. Red Callender, another great bass player, and drummers Ray Porter and Connie Kay. Connie Kay, if you remember, went on to play on Van Morrison's landmark Astral Weeks album. And all these people were widening the approach of bebop, spreading the word, and it began to seep into a lot more places than just the two poles on the West and East Coast. It was getting exposure on the radio at this time, and of course it really blossomed into a full-fledged movement that definitely took jazz in a completely different direction and kind of put the swing and the swing bands out of business. It really went downhill for a long time for anybody playing the big band arrangements, and remained kind of a niche thing for many, many decades, as a matter of fact. But there were four people who emerged that I'd like to highlight from bop and really became big stars by launching their careers in this style and in this idiom. And the first I want to talk about was Dizzy Gillespie. I know I mentioned him yesterday. Dizzy was the first artist to land a major label contract playing bebop, and he quickly became the public image of the movement. And Dizzy, with his berets and goatee and pronounced puffed out cheeks when he was playing his horn, also kind of became a caricature for those who found the new music distasteful. And Dizzy lapped it up. He took it all in stride. He was like, bring it on. The more attention you want to give me, the better. And he played his image to the hilt. And he also, when he performed, hammed it up. I mean, he understood how people performed in vaudeville and all kinds of different shows throughout history. And he just played it up. And all the while, you know, occasionally those kind of antics would distract a little bit from his music. But all the while, he was making some of the most compelling bebop in history. Between 1945 and 1948, he really laid down some unbelievably classic music. He worked with a wide variety of musicians and different settings and made some great records as a leader with under the name the Dizzy Gillespie Sextet, Dizzy Gillespie's All-Stars, and the Dizzy Gillespie Quintet and Septet. He also backed up Sarah Vaughan on some of her outstanding bebop tracks. So let's hear kind of what that sounded like. Here's Dizzy doing the appropriately titled Dizzy Atmosphere from the year 1945. If you liked what you heard, some of the collections that I found that are out there right now in the streamings that showcase this period are a couple called Groovin' High, and then another collection called Getting Dizzy, the High-Flying Dizzy Gillespie. And those will have a lot of this great classic bebop period with Dizzy's playing with all kinds of people from the scene. Another record not to miss is a real classic that many people treasured for a long time, and I came to treasure when I started getting into jazz. And it's called Bird and Diz, which pairs Gillespie with the next person we're going to talk about, Charlie Parker. Charlie Parker was the doomed romantic legend of bebop. His struggles with heroin and alcohol, combined with his absolutely astonishing musical mind and talent, made Bird one of the faces of bebop's Mount Rushmore. Parker helped spread the music to the West Coast when he remained there after traveling to L.A. to perform with Dizzy in 1945. He had a stay in a rehab facility there that helped him stay clean during much of 1946 and part of 1947 before he returned to New York City and resumed the habit that would slowly sap his talent and eventually cost him his life. But he burned very brightly before that. And some of the stuff he did is considered, if not the greatest, some of the very, very greatest jazz recordings of all time. And here's Bird doing his classic bebop showcase, Ornithology. Thank you. A great place I would recommend starting out with Charlie Parker, if you like what you heard and you want to investigate him in this period, is a collection called The Complete Savoy and Dial Master Takes. So this has got all the really classic stuff that he did with Savoy and Dial. A lot of it has Miles Davis as a sideman. It's available on the streamings. And if you start there, then you can easily just read a little bit about Bird's life, and there's a million jazz resources out there and discographies where you can take your next step. But that's where I would definitely recommend starting, is the Complete Savoy and Dial Master Takes collection. The next person I want to talk about is Thelonious Monk. Monk was at the heart of the creation of bebop. He was, in the house band at Minton's, and played all the time at these jazz sessions at Monroe's and everything. And he was right there, and his ideas and his playing certainly helped shape the harmonic and melodic way that bebop developed. But his musical mind was too unique and too restless to stay strictly within any style, really. But he did make some incredible bebop recordings before he began to take off on his own trail, which he followed doggedly for the rest of his career. And his best bebop work, to my ears and my mind anyway, appears on a collection called The Genius of Modern Music, Volume 1. Here's a tune from that collection. It was recorded in 1947 and inspired by fellow pianist Bud Powell, and it's called In Walked Bud.
Thank you.
a great one to put on anytime you see Bud Verge walk in the room. Just fire that on, and you got something there. But I would definitely start with The Genius of Modern Music. Now, again, as I said, Monk is not working or recording anyway for a long time in the bebop style. Once he started doing sessions as a leader, he was off. He was flying off in his own direction, following his own thought patterns and musical mind, which was unlike any other one really in the history of modern music, to my mind anyway. So finally, let's talk about Miles Davis. Miles was just a student when the bebop movement began. He would go to class during the day. He studied musical theory, and I think at one point he was even in a dictation class because it was part of what he had to learn. Can you imagine Miles Davis ever taking dictation from anybody? I always find that funny. But he would spend, you know, most of his nights at first just hanging out and watching Parker and anybody he could see doing these jam sessions, and eventually found himself on stage jamming at Minton's and Monroe's with all the founding players of the movement. And it didn't take too long before he had dropped out of Juilliard and he was a full-time musician. He had an unbelievable talent. It was absolutely staggering, and it would, within, you know, 7 to 8 years, take him to the status of a jazz icon, like right up at the top. He would become one of the most famous jazz musicians, if not the most famous of all time. And he was one of the first people that moved away from bebop into a different style, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. All the different musical styles that sprung from the umbrella of bebop is really pretty fascinating, and we'll talk about those tomorrow. But Miles also contributed some of the most thrilling playing in the bebop canon. Here's a track I want to play for you. It's one of the very earliest Miles sessions where he was the leader. He collected the band and put the song list together, and it's a tune called Sippin' at Bell's. There's a lot of Miles out there that is available, and mostly, like I said, it's if you look for the Charlie Parker Quintet, the original, you can hear a lot of Miles on, as I said, on the Savoy Dial Masters. There are some early Miles collections out there on the streamings. If you search for early Miles or Milestones or Miles Davis's All-Stars, you can find some of the early stuff. I think Miles is a really important part of what happened in bebop, but mainly as a sideman, as I said. So look for some of the Charlie Parker stuff when Miles was there, and you'll find the great Miles stuff in the bebop style. And we'll talk more about where Miles took things. And it was really just by early 1949, late 1948, where Miles had already said, hey, I think it's time to move. Let's start to do something different. And over the next 20 years, he would go all the way out, as you know, into something pretty amazing. Okay, Those are four people that I wanted to highlight for you in our brief history of bebop as the music really expanded and became a strong force in jazz. And eventually, the things that would spring from bebop would change jazz forever during the decade of the 1950s and early 60s, which is a pretty amazing time for jazz. One of my favorites, probably my all-time favorites. But you have to understand, I think, and you have to appreciate and dig, which I certainly do, where it all came from, and that was bebop. And I hope this has been somewhat interesting and somewhat enlightening for those of you who may not know exactly how the foundations played out. And I'd love to share anything that I have accumulated in my musical brain over the years to try to scoop it out one by one and give with others. So I hope this has been enjoyable, and really looking forward to tomorrow's episode, because I love sort of mapping out where all these tendrils went to in jazz. So I want to play out today with a track that features a vocal, and it is by Sarah Vaughan, and she was sometimes called the Queen of Bebop. And here's a track where both Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie are performing with her. And this is a recording from late 1945 or early 1946 called Lover Man. And with that, we will talk to you with the final part of the brief history of bebop tomorrow.
Someday we'll meet and you dry all my tears and whisper sweet little a huggin' and a kissin'. Oh, what we've been missing, love man. Oh, where can you be?
Charlie Parker was the doomed romantic legend of bebop.